Case number 13-7019, Freedom Watch, Inc., Appellant versus Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC. Mr. Klayman for the appellant, Ms. Lamb for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors, Judge Tatel, Judge Wilkins, Judge Srinivasan. This case is a case of first impression. It's a case of great seminal importance. The essence here is that we're dealing here with a headquarters agreement by Austria with OPEC, primarily Arab oil producers, which provides as follows. It prohibits service of process, direct and broad by private parties, service of process on an international organization without the involvement of the Austrian Federal Ministry, and any service of process in OPEC without the express consent of the Secretary General of OPEC. Secretary General of OPEC is obviously not going to consent to be served with process, much more sued. In effect, in practice, and in the letter of the law that Austria has set down, Austria provides OPEC with absolute immunity from American antitrust law.
Why is that point significant? I mean, aren't there lots of headquarters agreements that even the United States has entered into that are similar in effect?
Well, the only one that's been cited by OPEC is the United Nations agreement, and that's, you're dealing here with a governmental entity. By OPEC's lawyers' own admissions on behalf of OPEC, OPEC is an unincorporated trade association, similar to Swiss Watchmakers, and in the Sisal Sales Corporation case, which says that these entities are not immune from American antitrust law. As an old antitrust lawyer with the Antitrust Division of the Justice Department, I can tell you that, in fact, we do have an extraterritorial reach of our antitrust laws. And if we were to allow the argument of OPEC to stand, it, in fact, could never be sued under American law. So we have this clash. In fact, it's a denial of due process of Freedom Watch and other plaintiffs similarly situated.
Well, don't you have a problem with Rule 4H? I mean, I understand your point, but serving OPEC in 4H makes clear that serving OPEC in Austria requires, you know, either the approval of the government or consent.
Well, we're dealing here primarily, Your Honor, with, I understand what you're saying with 4H, but Rule 4F.
Okay. You want to talk, let's talk about 4F3.
Yes, 4F3.
4F3 is what you're focusing on,
right?
But
right.
You never made a motion to the trial court for an order for alternative service under 4F3, right?
Well, it was briefed. Okay. And what we said to the trial court.
You didn't make a motion asking for an order.
We didn't make a motion asking for an order, but we did personal service, Your Honor, which is an alternative method of service of process. We also did service by mail, which is an alternative method of service of process.
On U.S. counsel?
We didn't do it with regard to U.S. counsel. No, we did not. But we did it with OPEC.
I know that. But did you serve U.S. counsel? I couldn't tell from your brief whether you had actually served or whether your brief in the district court was serving as a request to allow you to serve.
We did not make a formal request to serve counsel. What we did was we served OPEC in two different ways, in person and by mail. And then the counsel came in and intervened.
You agree, don't you, that under 4F, that would be barred. That's not permissible under 4F because of, 4H, because of Austrian law, correct?
No, I don't agree with that.
None of the efforts to serve in Austria would be permissible under the federal rules. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, I think that's an open question. It's a gray area.
What's gray about it? Look at the language of 4H. I mean, 4H is not gray.
Four F.
Four F
one and two.
Three. right? I mean,
I'm not going to assert that in front of the court right now. We're talking about 4F is what we're asserting.
You're talking about 4F3.
Yeah, 4F3. That's what we're asserting here.
Yeah, and as best I can tell, your only service effort that would qualify under 4F3 would be, that it could qualify, would be your serving of local, of U.S. counsel, correct?
No.
What else
would it be? Well, the mails and also in person. That's an alternative method. Mm-hmm. And what we're also saying, Your Honor, is we did go to lower court. If you look what's in the record, it is a copious record. It's two volumes by counsel that says that they weren't representing OPEC, in effect. But the reality is we did ask the lower court that if it did not accept the service of process, to fashion an alternative method of service of process.
So you agree under 4F3 you need a court order?
Yes. And we asked the judge for that. And instead he dismissed it with prejudice, which was inappropriate.
But you didn't make a motion. In order to get an order, you make a motion, and you submit a proposed order. You did is, in opposition to a motion to dismiss, you said, well, our service was effective under 4F3.
We did ask the judge for an opportunity to make such a motion if he did not accept service of process that we had effected. So consequently, we're asking this court.
Where is that in the record?
It's in the briefs in the lower court. And we also asserted it in our pleadings here. It's in there. So what we're saying is it was improper.
If you hadn't asked the district court, it would be too late to assert it here. Your point is you asked for it.
We did.
Okay.
Your Honor.
Right.
And if you would like to supplement the record, we can do that. But it's in the record already.
Well, the record's the record.
Yeah, the record is the record, and it is in the record. And we're saying it was improper to dismiss it with prejudice. If you don't like that method of service of process, then we would like the opportunity to move the lower court for an order to make it in an alternative way. But here's the problem here, and this is why you have two issues to face here, not just service of process, but the issue of whether or not Austria can totally insulate OPEC from our antitrust laws. In other words, they have nullified the Sherman Act and the Clayton Antitrust Act.
But doesn't the district court follow the 11th Circuit's decision in Pruitt? Pruitt said in the final footnote, I think it's footnote 21 of the opinion, that they weren't saying that the district court never can order alternative service, even if it would contravene foreign law. That's a discretionary call by a district court. And in this case, the district court, said it was following Pruitt, and it didn't do it. So aren't we just reviewing whether the district court abused its discretion?
You're reviewing that as well, Your Honor, and we did assert that. But there are two issues here. When this matter goes back to the lower court, and I'm confident that you will ask the lower court to fashion an alternative method of service of process, the seminal issue is whether or not Austria can nullify American law, whether oil producers of OPEC, predominantly composed of Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Algeria, Venezuela, many of whom proceeds go to actually fund terrorist organizations, whether they can negate American law by deciding whether they can be sued. That's a denial of due process. We have a constitutional issue as well here.
But that's not the issue, because you didn't sue those countries individually. You sued OPEC.
We sued OPEC just as Swiss watchmakers was sued many years ago by the Justice Department, and the court upheld that suit.
You could have elected to sue all of the individual members of OPEC.
Then you would have had a situation of sovereign immunity. We can't sue the government. We're suing this unincorporated trade association, which is similar to the Swiss watchmakers and the rope manufacturers in the Sissel case that we decided. It is not in any way tenable, and this is why it is a case of first impression, and what your honors are going to rule is extremely important. This case could go to the Supreme Court. Can Austria say that American antitrust law has no effect?
What is the consequence of that for our thinking about the case?
Because that is an issue here.
What is it?
The extraterritorial reach of the American antitrust law. Can it be nullified?
That the case will go to the Supreme Court?
No, I'm just saying that as a lawyer.
I was just wondering. What the consequences
this is the second highest court in the land. It's the most prestigious appellate court. We look to you to make a decision.
Judge Silberman thinks it's the highest court in the land.
Okay, well, if you rule in my favor, I agree. But the fact is that we have a second look at this. The Pruitt court was wrong. And the reality is that we're faced with a situation.
Is that your only argument as to Pruitt that it was wrong, which I'm not saying that you can't make that argument, but do you have an argument that Pruitt doesn't actually govern everything at issue in this case? Or are you
saying it's another circuit? I mean, Judge
I don't mean it doesn't govern. It's persuasive. I'm sorry. I don't mean it doesn't govern in the sense that it's another court. I'm saying if Pruitt were in this court, would it be binding on this case, or do you have an argument that this case actually raises
an
issue?
No, it would not be binding because we have a constitutional issue here, and we have an issue of a clash of two legal systems. You know, Austria gives us no option to sue any company, to sue OPEC in particular. We're not talking about other Austrian companies, but OPEC. OPEC is totally insulated from American antitrust law. OPEC can do as it pleases here. It can price fix.
Let me take you back to the core issue, which is the federal rules here. What's your best argument? You agree that the exercise of the authority under 4F3 by the district court is discretionary, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What's your best argument that the district judge either did not exercise his discretion under 4F3 or that he abused it?
He should have allowed us to file a motion for alternative service of process if he did not find personal service and mail appropriate. At that point, we could have addressed the issues of whether or not Austrian law can trump American law with regard to OPEC. And this is what's so remarkable. With regard to other Austrian companies, you can make service of process through the ministry, the trade ministry in Austria, or use the Hague Convention. With regard to OPEC, Austria has taken OPEC off the table, and they've said, OPEC, you, Arab oil producers, don't have to obey American law. We cannot permit that. They're doing business here. They're fixing prices, and they're dividing markets.
Okay, Mr. Clinton, you're out of town.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you,
if I may have a minute.
We'll give you a minute or two for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good morning, Your Honor. Carolyn Lamb with White & Case for OPEC, and may it please the Court. Just two comments on what my colleague just mentioned. One, while OPEC in its brief may have mentioned two, the World Bank and the United Nations, certainly Pruitt mentions many headquarters agreements that exist that have a similar provision, including IAEA, OAS, bauxite, et cetera, et cetera. It is typical in a headquarters agreement to have a provision relating to immunity from service because they are creatures of international law. They're intergovernmental organizations. They have privileges and immunities at an international level, and that is, even under the restatement of U.S. law, in fact, U.S. law.
But do you take the position that because there's the existence of that kind of agreement, and let's suppose it's the Austrian example where the existence of that kind of agreement then elevates it to a matter of Austrian law, so that foreign law would prohibit a certain method of service, that that means that under F3 a district court can't order that method of service?
Well, under F3, I think with respect to a headquarters agreement situation, that is correct.
So what is there in F3 that tells us that because there's a headquarters agreement, a district court can't order
the headquarters agreement? You need to look to two things, Your Honor. One, it does say international agreement. That is not defined.
But have you made the argument that this is an international agreement, the headquarters agreement?
In fact, it is in Judge Schwabel's opinion.
But did you make the argument in
any of your... No, not in the brief.
Why would this be an international... I mean, because it's between OPEC and the Austrian government?
Yes.
But doesn't international agreement mean an agreement that the U.S. is a party to, as well as the other nation that where the service is being attempted?
Do they have to be parties
to the same agreement?
It is not defined that way in the rules, Your Honor. But even putting
isn't
that...
Isn't that the context of the rules? I mean, is agreement mean the same thing throughout 4F? And that's certainly what it means when we're talking in 4F1.
4F1 mentions including, and it includes, the two Hague Conventions. But one searches in vain to find a definition in either the advisory committee notes or in the text of the rule, to be sure. But you also would look to, Your Honor, the advisory committee notes, the 1993 advisory committee notes, which we do cite. And we say that even under those notes.
But all the advisory committee notes say, as far as I can tell, with respect to this provision, with respect to F3, is that you have to minimize interference.
Minimize.
But that doesn't mean you eliminate it. And in fact, if you distinguish it from the advisory note for F2, which says it's generally not authorized to violate foreign law, then it seems to me what the advisory committee is saying is under F2, you can't, which makes sense because the text of F2 itself says unless prohibited by foreign law. But the text of F3 doesn't say that, and the advisory committee note doesn't, as far as I can tell, say that just because it violates foreign law, you can't authorize it under F3.
It's possible, but when you have a complete collision with foreign law, it would be exceedingly difficult for a court in the exercise of its discretion to say that it's appropriate to do so.
Where do you get that in the, where does that come from? Well, let me ask you a different question or a related question. Do you think, what would you point to in the district court's decision to indicate that the district judge actually exercised his discretion under 4F3?
Under 4F3? Well, yeah. He was not asked to exercise discretion specifically because Mr. Klayman never made a request.
He addressed it at the end of his order. He addressed 4F3, and he gave several reasons why service was inappropriate under 4F3. One was that there was no proof of service, which is not correct. Right. Another was that it was controlled by Pruitt, but Pruitt didn't deal with this. And then he cited a 4H case, not a 4F3 case. So setting aside whether or not, I mean, the district court thought that he had been asked to authorize service under 4F3. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had that paragraph in there.
And
so, yeah, right? Or do you not agree with that?
No, we do agree with that, Your Honor. He wasn't specifically asked by Mr. Klayman, who never made a motion. He argued in his brief, and the court quite appropriately said, even if I were exercising discretion, I would not exercise discretion in this way because under 4F3, he didn't think it appropriate for all the reasons that are stated, well stated in Pruitt, and he did not think it appropriate in the context of the Austrian law.
Excuse me. Let's make sure we're looking at the same part of the district court decision. Joint Appendix 725. He says, as to the claim not raised in proof that service was on U.S. counsel, this argument fails for several reasons. He doesn't say, even if I were asked, I'm rejecting it. I read this as him as a district court saying, specifically addressing the 4F3 issue. And then he says, one, plaintiff hasn't filed proof. Okay? And then he says, even if it had language, even if he had filed proof, right, OPEC didn't authorize White and Case to receive service, which may or may not be relevant under 4F3. And then he cites a 4H case. It looks to me like he's addressing 4F3 there.
He does address it in that paragraph, but remembering about 4F3 and the service on White and Case is counsel, he said a request is effectively, when you look at what record was before the court when he's deciding that issue, there was never a request made under 4F3. There was never any proof that they had, in fact, served counsel. No process was delivered to counsel, and the evidence in the record shows that counsel wasn't authorized to receive it.
Okay, so let me just, suppose we were to assume, this is only a hypothetical, okay? Suppose we were to assume that what Mr. Klayman said in his opposition to the motion to dismiss was sufficient to serve as a request for service under 4F3. Just assume that for purposes of my, I understand your argument that it isn't, but assume that it is. then what do you say about this discussion?
Even assuming that it is, it can't be the rule, and it's not the rule, Your Honor, that in a situation like this with a headquarters agreement, that every time you retain a lawyer to contest service, the lawyer is authorized to receive service or it would gut the rule. That's not the rule. He could go to the Federal Rules Committee and to Congress and have a special rule made. He could get a special rule under the service provisions, in fact, for serving OPEC. But that doesn't exist. Under our existing rules, the court was correct in the exercise of its discretion. Here, under 4F, both Sections 2 and 3.
Do we know from your... from the amicus brief from the Austrian government and from the declaration or your brief, is there, do we know whether or not service on U.S. counsel under 4F3, that's, I'm talking about 4F3 now, would violate Austrian law?
Well, Austrian, yes.
Where do we know that from?
What you know from Austrian law is the only means of serving is through the federal ministry and consistent with the provisions of the headquarters agreement.
Suppose there had been an OPEC delegation in the United States, traveling through the United States, and it was served personally.
Right, but there isn't as much a territoriality concept of an OPEC delegation being served here versus because the process reaches to OPEC in Vienna.
You mean under 4F3, it reaches through the process to Vienna,
right,
and therefore
right.
offends Austrian sovereignty.
It offends sovereignty.
But we don't know that. I suspected you would say that. That's pretty clear from but nobody really addressed it, did they?
Well, it wasn't clearly addressed because it was never clearly requested. If the motion had been made and briefed, very obviously it could have been. And I note one very important thing here that twice we heard Mr. Klayman mention, that in fact this was a dismissal with prejudice. It was not. The judge dismissed it without prejudice. Mr. Klayman is free to try to go through the appropriate means to serve in another case. Mm-hmm. But here, the judge's exercise of discretion was completely consistent with existing law. There's no basis to determine there was an abuse. And Klayman completely, and Freedom Watch completely, failed to carry the burden to demonstrate that any appropriate service was made.
And when you say he's free to go through the appropriate means, you mean a means that would encompass OPEC's consent?
OPEC's, but going through the federal ministry and obtaining OPEC's consent.
Well, what about proper service under 4F3?
That would
he
require...
He could make a motion under 4F3...
If he made a
to
motion...
...to serve U.S. counsel.
Well, you know, if he made that motion, it could be briefed and decided by a court considering all of the issues. Our view would be under existing law that is inappropriate.
But can I just make sure that I understand your construction of 4F3? The beginning part of 4F, before you get to any of the subsections, discusses how under federal law a person may be served at a place not within any judicial district of the United States. So it talks about how someone can be served outside of any of the...
That's right.
So how can you use any provision of 4F to justify service of U.S. counsel, of someone in the United States?
That's... I think that's a very good point, but you're not really... the compulsive effect of service is on the foreign entity. I don't think, and it hasn't been fully briefed because the request hasn't been made.
Well, I'm looking at Mr. Klayman's memorandum in opposition to the motion to dismiss at Joint Appendix. That's at 674, and he says this court may allow alternative means of service under 4F3. Your point is, are you arguing that's not sufficient? In other words, you move to dismiss for lack of service. He says in his opposition, the court may authorize alternative service under 4F3. Why isn't that enough?
Well, that really, while it raised an issue of what else the court might do, it was not a separate motion that certain methodologies be approved.
Well, the way it came up was you moved to dismiss for lack of
That's
service.
That's right.
He's opposing that and arguing that his service was adequate, and you have a lot of reasons why it wasn't, but then he says this court may allow alternative means. That's the title of the section.
I guess as the former district court judge here, I would say that,
say that
the federal rules require somebody to make a motion and to submit a proposed order, and the local rules require that to be the same.
Is that your answer?
Well, that is a very, yes, absolutely, but also it's not up to the court to discern all of the possible ways that he might do this.
But he says on 675.
Sorry, you go ahead.
On the particular ways, no, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm
no,
sorry.
You go ahead.
If it's the particular ways, you mean the particular methods of service.
Yes.
Then he says on 675, another common method of service pursuant to Rule F3 is service on a defendant's United States-based attorney when there's evidence of a United attorney-client relationship. So I think he does invoke this particular means.
Right.
In the course of that discussion.
At that time, briefed extensively, in fact, why that was inappropriate in this circumstance. That so, even that would be contrary to Austrian law.
And the district judge, I think, understood there to be a request under 4F3 on the table, which is why the district judge responded to that request. Because the district judge could have said, I don't have any such request before me, and therefore I'm not even going to entertain it. But what he says is that he understands that the court should permit alternative methods of service, but then he goes on to reject that for the reason stated in Pruitt. Am
yes.
I understanding that? Okay.
In fact, so just explain, far be it from me to question a real live district judge sitting here with us, or former district judge, but just tell me how this would work. So Mr. Clayman served in several ways that he thought was adequate, right? You moved to dismiss. He files a memorandum in opposition. And is it your point that what he said in that memorandum is not adequate because once you filed your motion to dismiss, he should have responded with an actual motion for alternative service?
That's right, Your Honor.
I see. Okay. Now, that's not what happened in this Ninth Circuit case. What's the name of it?
Rio.
What's the name of it?
Rio.
Yeah, Rio.
Oh, Rio.
Rio.
Right.
As I understand what happened in Rio, it was just exactly what happened here. It's just the same thing. He served U.S. counsel,
but in Rio, Your Honor, I think a couple of points to recall. In Rio, it was primarily a internet sports gambling company. And there, while the summons was forwarded to the company in Costa Rica, the plaintiff, in fact, did put on evidence that the company's preferred method of doing business was by email. And this wasn't a headquarters agreement situation. This wasn't something where, in fact, it was absolutely forbidden, prohibited by the law.
Okay. Before you sit down, I just want to be totally sure I understand your argument and what the issue is here. Your basic position is that this question of D.C. service on U.S. counsel was not fully briefed, because he didn't ask for it, right?
And he didn't. One of our points, and you can see it in our briefs, is he didn't make it.
Okay.
And if we were
to disagree with that, then would you agree that it's got to go back for the district court to exercise, actually exercise his discretion under this, or do you think we can read this alternatively as the district court having properly exercised his discretion? Which is it?
I think the court very much exercised his discretion very appropriately, consistent with the existing law.
Even though he cited a 4-H case?
He cited a 4-H case, but he also, in analyzing it, looked to Pruitt.
But Pruitt, the question of serving U.S. counsel wasn't at issue in Pruitt.
The question of whether you could serve OPEC in any way was certainly at issue.
Yes, that's true. Okay.
And that would include...
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you. Did you want to... I'm sorry.
No, well, of course, we think for all of the reasons we've stated that claimant or plaintiff failed to, in fact, prove that they carried the burden they must prove to show compliance with the service they performed, and the court's exercise of its discretion was entirely appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Klayman, you are out of time, but you can take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First and foremost, as Your Honors have observed, Judge Walton, the lower court judge, foreclosed any way of serving OPEC. In effect, it was a dismissal with prejudice. He says there's no way he could do it, so don't bother coming back.
Well, no, but wait. But Ms. Lamb just pointed out that it was without prejudice, and you could file a new lawsuit and file a motion under 4F3.
It would be assigned to the same judge, and he would make the same ruling. What he in effect held. Uh-huh. Was that there was no way that we could make service a process under any method. He did address this. Your Honor was correct, Judge Tatel, in saying that he addressed these issues. And we didn't have to make a motion. That is a red herring.
Why?
Because generally judges, when they receive an opposition to a motion to dismiss.
You're telling Judge Wilkins this point's a red herring?
Well, I mean it respectfully.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, maybe it's a blue herring.
A respectful red herring.
Okay, blue herring rather than red herring.
I'm sure he's willing to accept it.
Red, white, and blue herring. But the fact is that we had no avenue of relief, and he could have said, look, I'm dismissing it without prejudice, go back and make a motion. He didn't. He said he shut the door. You're done. And Ms. Lamb just admitted that he exercised his discretion on that issue, so he reached that issue. Secondly, the headquarters agreement.
Well, then if you think he did exercise his discretion, we're reviewing for abuse of discretion.
Correct.
And...
Now, with regard to the World Bank and...
But, Mike, how would you make that argument? That this is...
It's an abuse of discretion to completely nullify American law by virtue of his interpretation of service of process.
All he did was, if he in fact exercised his discretion, all he did was say, I exercised my discretion not to authorize service in this case. I dismissed the case without prejudice.
He didn't say that. He went beyond it and he shut the door. Mm-hmm. Okay. With regard to the headquarters agreement with the World Bank and UN... Those are governmental entities. OPEC is doing business as an unincorporated association in a commercial capacity.
What about the other examples that were cited in Pruitt that weren't organized?
Your Honor, that's where Pruitt's wrong, okay? The judges were wrong.
But, I mean, that's fact.
I don't care about
fact,
Pruitt.
Fact as far as other headquarters agreements that were cited. Are you saying that those facts weren't true?
No, what I'm saying is that Pruitt made a mistake. Pruitt is not accurate. This court is asked to come up with a decision which is legally correct. There's a difference between OPEC doing business in a commercial capacity in the United States, making money, and the United Nations and the World Bank, which are pure governmental organizations.
But Pruitt used the example of like the bauxite, you know, producers in their headquarters. Isn't it the same as
Pruitt,
that?
Pruitt was wrong, Your Honor. You know, I'm a Florida lawyer. I deal with the 11th Circuit a lot. I can tell you, and I don't mean to disparage the 11th Circuit, this court is much more contemplative when it makes rulings, and we appreciate being in front of you. That decision was simply wrong. With regard to international agreements, the agreement was between OPEC and Austria, as correctly pointed out, not the United States. Austria does not have the ability to tell the United States that its law does no longer applies in Austria with regard to OPEC. That is remarkable, denies due process. And last but not least, we did specifically, as pointed out, suggest alternative methods of service, including email, including fax. But you know what? We went the extra mile. We went to Austria and served them personally. We sent mail from Austrian postal authorities to OPEC. And OPEC says, unless the Secretary General of OPEC says it can be sued, forget it. Go home. American law, you don't mean anything in Austria.
Why didn't you file a motion under 4F3, or why can't you refile and file a motion under 4F3 asking for basically a letter rogatory to the Austrian officials and asking them on your behalf to seek consent of the Secretary?
Because the judge held, as Judge Tatel read in his decision, that there was no method that we could ever use that would trump Austrian law that insulated OPEC. He shut the door. That's why we're here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.